This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, a conversation with Porter County Sheriff David Reynolds. There's a very special program coming up at Ivy Tech Community College in Valparaiso on April 30th that's going to talk about the dangers of violent video games and bullying as they relate to school shootings. Two very dynamic speakers are coming into the area to have that program. We'll find out more about it. We'll also, of course, bring you another conversation from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. And we also have a conversation that Sharon Jackson had with the representative of the American Passenger Rail Heritage Foundation, Robert Taborn. We'll talk about interpretive history and how you can once again take advantage of it on the South Shore Line. That and more coming up, but first the news. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. There is a correlation between the dangers of video games and bullying with school shootings. And there's going to be a very special program in Porter County coming up on Monday, April 30th, to talk about that with two very special guests. And to find out all about this, we'll check in now with Porter County Sheriff David Reynolds. Sheriff Reynolds, thanks for being with us here on the program.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Well, first, let's talk here about the very serious nature of the issue. We are certainly aware of the problems with school shootings, the most recently, of course, happening in Florida, which has such a tragic ending. And of course, other concerns, too, of others that have happened around the country. And in particular, one that you're one of your guests coming up for the special program on April 30th is personally aware of. Tell us first here about the issue that you have and your concerns here in Porter County about this relationship between bullying and video games with what has happened in schools.
Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity. I'm involved in the Safe School Commission in Porter County, and what we've done a lot, we think, in the last 3 years to try to better protect our schools regarding an alert system, a one county, one protocol. We have actually posters that are in every school, public and private, all 75 schools, with the primary objective of teaching the students and teachers and administrators and employees what to do in case of an active shooter. But there's been a lot of discussion in the last year about looking at different factors that might even actually cause something like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously mental health is an issue that we have to deal with, but there is a foremost expert in school bullying and bullying in general and the violent video games. And this individual's name is Phil Chalmers. I've actually heard him speak. He's very dynamic. He's done a lot of research on all of the shootings, and there is some common denominators regarding some of these shootings. And so Phil Chalmers is one of our speakers on April 30th, and we're also very fortunate to have Frank DeAngelis. And Frank DeAngelis was the principal at Columbine High School when, I don't know if it was the first, but it was one of the first major school shootings that occurred that got everyone's attention on what not to do in a school shooting. So, and he's speaking for an hour. So we're really fortunate to have two very dynamic and national type speakers at this event on April 30th at Ivy Tech. It's from 5:30 to 8:30.
Now, how did you and members of the Safe Schools Committee manage to be able to get Mr. DeAngelis and Mr. Chalmers together at one particular spot to be able to talk to people?
Well, that's a great question. We have a school. We have the alert system that we chose 2.5 years ago is School Guard, and the owner of School Guard, we went through him to get a hold of both of these individuals that do work for him.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the nation, promoting this alert system. But I don't know if they're employees of School Guard, but that he made arrangements to fly them up. Then they paid for the flights, and then we this Safe School Commission went out and got some sponsors to actually pay for them. So School Guard was very instrumental in getting these two individuals at our event on April 30th.
Now, you took a moment here, and you already told us a little bit about Frank DeAngelis here, about his relationship, of course, with the problem, having been the principal there at Columbine High School during the problems that happened there back in April of 1999. And you've mentioned a little bit here about Phil Chalmers. What is his way that he's been able to be able to look into the mind of young people to be able to determine what kind of problems might lie there?
Well, he's wrote several books. One of the things he's done is interviewed many of these shooters.
Uh-huh.
He's researched, everything is like based on what evidence-based decision-making now. That's kind of like the flavor of the day, so to speak, and which is, very powerful. I mean, you base your decisions on the research that's done. And our thinking is, that's all good, but if you've got someone who's already did the research and has learned from the research that he's done, then why shouldn't we, kind of tap into that? Another person that we have had at Porter County is Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman, who's another school specialist, and he also has spoke in Porter County several times on school safety. So I think we're just really fortunate to tap into people like Frank DeAngelis and Phil Chalmers on what they have seen nationwide. And right now there's 350 seats available in this auditorium, which is a really nice auditorium in Ivy Tech. And I think we're close to 290 RSVPs.
Wow.
So if people are interested, wow, they need to... it's free, okay. So, but I don't think you'll be disappointed in spending a couple hours. We're really trying to get parents, administrators, teachers to this event, and so far the people that are that have RSVP'd mostly are high school administrators and teachers from high school and college. Almost all of the universities in our immediate area will be there. So we're excited, and I think it's some education and training that they'll get that I think they'll find very powerful.
And it's probably safe to say that if parents want to attend this particular event coming up here on April 30th, that probably it's wise if they have young people, they ought to get grandma or grandpa come in and babysit, because they're not really, really welcome to tag along to this event. This is something for grown-ups only.
Right. Phil Chalmers does do a program for kids, and so does Frank DeAngelis for students.
Right,
but this is not the one. This is going to be focused for parents and grandparents. If grandparents are raising their children, they need to understand what's going on. And I talked to a supervisor for U.S. Steel, and their U.S. Steel is going to attend. And bullying if you're bullying in grade school and middle school and high school, and then you get a job somewhere, I don't think you stop being a bully.
Yeah.
But what we're finding is, and there's mental health issues that come into this play too. But what they're going to find out is they're going to get better information on how to identify a bully and what to do about it.
I can imagine that this is very important. As you mentioned about the fact that we have one of our local industries interested in having somebody attend to learn something about the problem, because as you mentioned, a bully is still going to be a bully, whether it's a young person or a grown-up here. And I suppose that can lead to a lot of problems in the workplace if it's not captured ahead of time.
Absolutely. So we're really we're real pleased on the response we're getting.
That's great.
And I appreciate the fact that you're going to broadcast this too. That's good.
Well, I know that we'd let people know this, particularly if they are interested in attending this event on April 30th, which is, again, it's going to happen at Ivy Tech Community College in Valparaiso. Get right now, get your seating arranged here. And how do you do that, by the way, too, if somebody is interested, for what limited seats that are left?
Yeah, you could call 477-3112 or email jbacknick, jbacknick, at porter-ps.org. Mm-hmm. And just leave a message for Jordina, who's my administrative assistant and who's controlling coordinating the seating arrangements. But you need to call the sheriff's department as soon as you can. Yeah. If you're interested.
That's great. Sheriff Reynolds, we talked here a little bit here just briefly about the Porter County Safe Schools Commission. You've told us a little bit about the organization and the fact that they are working very hard with organizations around the Porter County in particular, and branching out as well, too, especially with this particular event coming up on April 30th. What other activities does the Safe Schools Commission have planned or any more discussions like this one coming up?
Well, we're working on a lot of policies. Since we have seven school districts, we're dealing with a lot of important issues regarding school safety. I think what we'll see is the response is going to be so good. We're actually entertaining the thought of bringing back Lieutenant David Grossman back. And there are a lot of foremost experts in the field. I think Porter County, we worked real hard trying to keep it very transparent and cooperative and collaborative to all the school systems, both private and public. And I think it's a testament to who shows up at our meetings. We have everyone shows up. We have 40, 50 people show up once a month to discuss issues like this and discuss, how best to access CCTV cameras and how best to get into the schools if the schools are locked. And so we are doing a lot of things, but we're doing it together, so all seven districts have to agree to it. And really, I can't say enough about the superintendents. They've been remarkable as far as being collaborative and cooperative and working towards the end of the goal of keeping the students and all of the employees in these schools safe.
Porter County Sheriff David Reynolds, thank you very much for spending time with us to tell us about this very important event coming up on April 30th. And people get their opportunities to attend this, do so right away. And we hope to hear back later that you've gotten some good response from people who have attended and certainly taken something away. Not only it's an eye-opening event, to be sure, for what they're going to no doubt see and hear, but something they can remember, they can put to use here, as you say, to try to make the schools all across Porter County and across Northwest Indiana, for that matter, much, much safer. Thank you for being with us to talk about it.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for the opportunity.
Our next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
When somebody tells you you have cancer, you'll try anything. If somebody says walk around with an egg on your head and this... Period. I might be wearing a hat, but I'll have the egg, Well, originally I was diagnosed with renal cell carcinoma back in 1996, which is the name for kidney cancer. And so I had the kidney removed in 1996, and it was thought that it all was gone. Somehow in 2007, it turned up in my lungs and liver and some in my brain. That particular cancer has no cure, and the best that you can do is to keep it stable. And if you can do that, you can be okay. Attitude has a lot to do with your health. I think music helps me in that way, having something to look forward to and having something else to think about even, because I'm writing a lot and I'm playing a lot. I'm not sitting around moaning and groaning about I have cancer. I feel like I've gotten a shot across the bow here, and I better get moving. And I feel fortunate in that manner. You might go out and get hit by a car right now and not have that warning. Some of the projects that you intended to do next year might not get done. If you have it in the back of your mind that every day is precious and some things you might not get done, then you get busy doing some of the things that you that are important to you. I feel that we all are put here for certain things to do, and I think mine is music, you know, and if I can make people happy, and if I can leave some pieces behind that'll make people happy listening to them even after I'm gone, then I think that's important. It's a great feeling to compose music. I feel like it's great when you hear back what you've composed. I think everybody has a talent, and I feel somewhat like like all these things are floating around and being transmitted by the Creator, and we all are like radios, and all of us are tuned to whatever channel we tune into, and some can pick up this thing. Like I'd be no good at math, I'm afraid. But somebody's tuned to the mass station and they can get that. I happen to be tuned to the music station and I can pull that in, you know. Plus, I think music has a spiritual aspect to it. There's some people that are even experimenting with certain intervals can cure certain things, you know, certain sounds can cure certain things. I think if I find the interval that cures cancer, I'm going to be pounding on it up. All the rest of my compositions will be based around that. Audience will be saying, that sounded like the last thing he played. But at any rate, you know, I think the music is very helpful.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. Today's high school students navigate stressors that range from test-taking anxieties to skyrocketing college costs, from the angst of social media to the fear of school shootings. Indiana schools are trying to mitigate the challenges to mental health, and Indiana Public Broadcasting's Emily Seiberg reports the problem may be even worse at schools that are highly rated and then often high pressure.
Gia Bradford has some words of hard-earned advice she'd give her freshman year self, if she could.
And also take the SAT earlier.
True.
Because I did not take that early enough.
Bradford is a senior at West Lafayette High School. She and her fellow seniors are in the last months of their high school careers, so they're starting to relax a little. But the past 4 years haven't been worry-free. Sometimes, says senior Gabriella Espinoza, the pressures are self-imposed.
I came into high school and I wanted to be valedictorian.
Espinoza says she filled her time with advanced placement courses, but eventually realized trying to do too much was stressful. The students all agree theirs is a competitive high school. They wonder if they participate in too many extracurricular activities or too few. And they all know someone who struggled with depression.
The number one issue is anxiety. It has been the theme this year, and probably for the last school year as well.
Libby Sheffield is a West Lafayette High School counselor. Sheffield isn't just responsible for students' academic concerns. Her role includes helping manage their emotional and social health. But school counseling departments don't always have the capacity to reach every student.
There aren't enough of us counselors to go around to help all the kids who are in need.
According to the American School Counselors Association, the ideal student-to-counselor ratio is 250 to 1. Sheffield says West Lafayette High School meets this preferred ratio after bringing in an additional counselor last year. But prior to that, the ratio was approximately 400 to 1. And even that is better than some Indiana schools. Sheffield says teachers are often among the first to identify students in need of help. And often, she says, they're in the best position.
But the adult who has been with that student week after week, day after day, and knows that student, when that student walks in and something's not quite right, then the teacher typically picks up on that.
Indiana school years are typically 180 days long, but West Lafayette Superintendent Rocky Killian says school still accounts for a small minority of the total time in a student's life, too much of which he thinks is now taken up by testing.
And then having children spend nearly 2 weeks of their instructional year in standardized testing, it's inhumane.
And data suggest the pressure may be affecting students' mental health. Indiana ranks last in the nation in recent rankings from nonprofit group Mental Health America for the percentage of adolescents who've suffered a major depressive episode in the last year. And even in one of the state's most populous areas, Tippecanoe County, families today face shortages of mental health resources, especially those geared specifically towards adolescents. At Lafayette's Willowstone Family Services, there's a waiting list for counseling. And Lisa Marie Lucy, Willowstone's Director of Clinical Services, says tackling mental health concerns early is key in preventing issues in college or adulthood.
When you start out with somebody who just has test-taking anxiety, if you don't deal with that, it can blossom into something different.
Lucy says pressures have only increased for today's teenagers.
And I've been finding more these days over the past probably 10 years, there's more pressure to be perfect, to perform better, to be the best.
Being the best means going to a good college if you're a senior at West Lafayette High School. Gia Bradford still didn't know where she was going with only a month before decision day.
It's just anxious waiting because a lot of people like already have their decisions, which I think is great, but then you're also kind of waiting and be like, people like underclassmen, people are like, oh, where are you going? And I'm just like, oh, well, you know, I don't know yet.
Amid the increasing noise in their lives, Indiana students must focus more than ever on tests, both of their academics and of their emotional well-being. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Emily Seiberg.
Docents of the American Passenger Rail Heritage Foundation are back on the South Shore Line trains, riding to educate and train people and to everyone who rides the train. Robert Taborn, who is the executive director of the American Passenger Rail Heritage Foundation, spoke recently with Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson about what people can learn when they attend these hosted train rides.
So tell me about the organization and what your purpose is.
Yeah, the American Passenger Rail Heritage Foundation's Rail Rangers program. We've been around for about 3 years, and we provide onboard educational programs. We do this several times a year on private historic rail excursions, but our main focus in the last year has been working with the wonderful folks over at the South Shore and Northern Indiana Commuter Transportation District to educate passengers about what they see outside their window between Chicago's Millennium Station and South Bend, via Northwest Indiana, Gary and Michigan City, Miller, and all the communities in between. We tell people what they see outside their windows. They're passing through the state park and the National Lakeshore. We tell a lot of interesting stories about the people, places, history, everything you see outside the window. You know, we have a saying that no one would watch the Travel Channel or maybe the History Channel with the audio turned down. You wouldn't want to listen to it on mute. Imagine all the things you'd be missing. Well, we're kind of the audio that goes along with your train rides. You actually know what you're seeing outside your window.
Yeah, you might want to watch it for the beautiful scenery going by, yeah. But without the audio, it would certainly be a lot less richer and a lot less content-filled and, yeah, a lot less fulfilling. So why is it important that people know what they're seeing out the window?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons why it's important. First, it's a, you know, two and a half hour ride between Chicago and South Bend. And, you know, we want to get people, first of all, unburied from their laptops or their tablets or their e-reader or movie player and kind of appreciate the landscape. The South Shore Line is actually very unique, and I bet a lot of people in Northwest Indiana don't realize that. In the short 90-mile stretch between Chicago and South Bend, you pass near or through four units of the National Park Service: the I&M Canal in Illinois, Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore over there in Indiana. You go near the Kankakee River Water Trail, and in the south side of Chicago, you go through right by Pullman National Monument. There's a lot of not only beautiful landscapes, but a lot of history that people don't realize they're traveling near. And when you see and understand the people, places, things outside your window, you're more likely to understand each other, maybe appreciate that beauty, maybe enjoy the state or national parks of Northwest Indiana a little bit more.
Did you say that you pass through these national parks like the I&M Canal on the South Shore?
You do. Three out of the four you actually will pass through. The I&M Canal, it starts from Millennium Station all the way to 47th Street on the south side of Chicago. It's a National Heritage Corridor since the 1980s. Pullman was just declared a national monument in February 2015 by former President Barack Obama, and they're in the process of preserving some of the homes, the historic hotel where they built the trains, and you literally go a half a block from there. You see it right outside your window on the South Shore. Of course, you go through 15 miles of the Indiana Dunes, and over in St. Joseph County, you go very close to the Kankakee River, a brand-new national water trail, which was declared in 2016.
So tell me about the upcoming activities planned by the APRHF.
Yeah, we're really excited. We had a six-month test partnership on the South Shore. We're a brand new program to see on Saturdays and Sundays, 2 to 3 times a month. We have our volunteers on, and passengers can ride and listen to our programs for no more than their regular train fare. We all volunteer to do these programs, and we don't make any money or anything from that. And passengers don't pay any more than their standard train fare to come and listen to us. So we narrate the route. We don't talk nonstop. We point out landmarks as we go along the route, and that's our main duty. We do one round trip out of Chicago at 8 in the morning. We get to South Bend a little afternoon, a little downtime, turn around, and then do a program for our wonderful westbound passengers. And we do this in one car, and again, people can feel free to join us and learn a little bit about their communities in Northwest Indiana.
And what do the interpretive guides do, and how are they qualified and educated about what's out the window?
We've done about 4 to 6 months of research for the before we began our programs on the South Shore in August, this past August, and we've all of our guides have attended programs at the National Lakeshore. We've got information from some of the park rangers over at the National Lakeshore, and we've developed actually a 120-page book about all the things you see along the route between Chicago and South Bend. Our docents have driven the route. They've taken the train. They've researched the book that we've put together, and, of course, they have some of their own stories. We're always finding new stories. So there's a pretty rigorous training program to be one of our 12 docents. We have a couple more going through training. So, yeah, we do require a pretty extensive training program before our guides are signed off. We're always learning new sites, and one of my favorite things is, you know, we're learning new sites from some of our passengers. We've had a passenger on a trip a couple weeks ago point out a historic brewery across from Pullman National Monument, and there's a very interesting horse motif that was built into this bar. And we did some research, and we found out that it was actually a Schlitz brewery from the 1890s. And doing further research, we found out that Pullman was actually a dry community. So there were tons of bars on the outskirts of the Pullman community on the south side of Chicago, but none in Pullman. So all the workers would go out to these bars, lining the tracks on the other side of the tracks, as you would say, the other side of the tracks, to go drink. And so our passengers are always pointing out questions of what's this, what's that? And if we don't know the answer, you know, it's still a learning process for us. And we enjoy that, learning new routes to point out to future passengers. We enjoy learning about new sites. Like, passenger might ask, well, what is that site? And if it's not something that we've already researched, we will go out and research that. And then if it's interesting, we'll incorporate it into the future program.
So it doesn't cost any more for a train fare to have one of your docents speak to the passengers.
Exactly. It's included in the regular train fare. So all they have to do is buy a regular ticket, check out our website for the 2 to 3 times that we're on the train per month, and then just come, and the car is marked with some yellow signs. You just come and sit down in the car. Seating is on a first-come, first-served basis, and it does get pretty crowded. But yeah, we all volunteer our time, and we don't charge anything. It just you pay your train, regular train fare that you would to ride, and you get to participate. It's a fun, pretty economical, family-friendly thing to do for the spring and summer here coming up.
When do you guys go out on the train?
We do one round trip from Chicago, because most of us are Chicago-based. We leave Chicago at 8:40 in the morning, and there's about 20 stops that people can either hop on or hop off between Chicago's Millennium Station and South Bend. You don't have to ride the entire route. If you do, we get to South Bend a little after noon Eastern time. We have a little layover. We then do a westbound program that leaves South Bend at 1:05 Eastern time and gets to Chicago at 2:39 Central time. So people can hop on or off. We'll have some people who just get on in Chicago and we'll ride to Dune Park and then spend a couple hours and catch us on the way back. So there's a lot of opportunities in different stations that people can hop on and off and listen to part of our program, the whole thing, whatever they want to do.
Why do you have this organization?
Yeah, we started the organization about 10 years ago to educate people about the role that passenger train travel has played in American history. A lot of people these days don't appreciate the role that the Transcontinental Railroad might have played, or steam engines. Now that we have cars and planes and can get somewhere quickly. And some of that history we felt was dying off. So the American Passenger Rail Heritage Foundation, which is actually headquartered in Northeast Missouri, started with a train lookout point and an exhibition of Amtrak history, a small museum train cars out in Missouri. And it was a great regional thing, but we expanded out in 2015 to doing these educational programs on private rail excursions, and then eventually it transitioned also into the South Shore last year. We just feel it's important to educate people about rail history, but also the beautiful parks and trails and all the wonderful things in Northwest Indiana. Maybe they didn't realize was in their neighborhood or not too far away from them.
Do you guys have any exhibit where you could see the highlights of the features that you're talking about?
Yeah, we travel, our interpretive guides will often travel with what we call a mobile visitor center. So we have some props of some of the things that you're able to see along the way. For example, we have a little bit of dune sand, and we have glass jars, because a lot of people don't realize that a big chunk of the dunes was kind of scooped up and moved away. Some of that land of the beautiful 200-foot-high sand dunes was moved as landfill for Chicago and even Northwestern University up in Evanston was built on Indiana dune soil. And a lot of that land was also used to make ball jars, glass jars. So we carry some of the props to show people that, hey, the sand from Northwest Indiana, there's some of those sand dunes that you don't see. Were actually these jars. Sometimes we carry pieces of sand that were hit by lightning, and we have pictures of some of the plants that you see along the way. One of the stories that people love is we talk about jellyfish that inhabit this little lake called Saugney Lake it's up near Hudson Lake, and we carry pictures of what these little jellyfish are, no bigger than a dime or a quarter. They float and come up to the surface in August. So we carry a lot of visuals to enhance these passengers' trips on the South Shore.
Do you have the upcoming dates that you guys are going to be on the trains?
I do. Our dates are 2 to 3 times a month, and they are up on our website right now. If you go to southshoreline.org or dunestrain.com, we have all our dates. And then we have dates, probably a scattering of almost a dozen dates posted all the way to the end of the summer if you want to go check that out. But it's 2 to 3 times a month, Saturdays or Sundays, all summer long, and really it'll be all year round.
What is the largest crowd you guys have ever spoken to?
Oh, we've had a couple, pretty much the whole car full, which is over just under 100 people. We've had this year alone, we have 4 private groups who've requested us to do programs for them. 2 of the groups are with the Dune Lund Seniors out of Chesterton. And then we have a school group who just contacted me a couple days ago from New Carlisle, just into St. Joseph County in Northwest Indiana, who's interested in riding with us. So we'll do programs for school groups, senior groups, as they contact us. We'll have that car jam filled of up to 100, almost 100 people if we can.
Is there anything else you wanted to tell me about this that maybe I haven't asked you about?
No, the South Shore never ran anything like this before. So, you know, when they started, they were kind of uncertain how passengers would take in, and they did a 6-month trial. And, the cool thing was they got such positive feedback from the passengers that we signed a whole year contract into 2019 to keep doing this. So, you know, people appreciate it. We just appreciate a round of applause and support, and we appreciate the South Shore taking the risk, taking the chance to have us on. They think outside the box. And the only other thing is, the only thing that really raises money for our groups is, since we don't charge anything, the 120-page route guidebook that our volunteers use, we decided to sell that and make it available for the public. So if you are traveling on a train that we're not on, maybe you do ride on a Monday through Friday, maybe you are a commuter, but you're still interested in listening, we decided, after several people requested it, we decided to sell our books online with all the money we take in going toward to support our program and our handouts and our speakers and some of our travel costs. And the book is Outside the Rails, a rail route guide from Chicago to South Bend. And we have those for sale at our website, Midwest Rails, all one word, midwestrails.com. And so we sell our book there. And that's really what helps fund the group and even pays for some of our insurance that we have to be on the train. The sales of our book, you know, really helps be able to do the programs. And so we sell the books for $20 on our website. And it's 120 pages, all about the history of the South Shore Line Railroad. And it tells you what you see outside your window. So if you don't have a guide on your train, you can still learn about everything outside your window, no matter what, if you have the book.
Does the book have pictures?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Pictures, maps, everything in it.
Who wrote the book?
Oh, myself, Robert, and my wife, Candace. We have 11 other Amtrak route guide books, too, as well, that we've written over the last 6 years that we sell.
And what's your website again?
for the program itself, it's Dunes Train, all one word, dunestrain.com. And then for the book, it's Midwest Rails, again, all one word, midwestrails.com.
Lakeshore Public Radio, Sharon Jackson, talking with Robert Taborn, who's executive director of the American Passenger Rail Heritage Foundation, about the onboard educational programs that are given by the volunteer interpretive guides this spring and summer on the South Shore Line. As the weather gets better, we find more people traveling. In particular, they're starting to pick up on the rail services in Northwest Indiana. Let's find out the latest about passenger rail issues here, including the issues that have come across the nation about safety on the rail. We have with us today Steve Coxhead. He's the president of the Indiana Passenger Rail Alliance. Steve, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Yes, good morning, Chris. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you're welcome. And we talk about the problems with rail safety. We know that there's been ongoing work on positive ways to be able to deal with problems on the rail, but we still have train accidents, and latest particular we know about, of course, the one that happened close to Washington, D.C., and one in South Carolina, too. Bring us up to date from what you know here about the investigation and how all of these problems on the rails seem to be affecting passenger rail, even for us here in Northwest Indiana.
Right. It is a problem. I mean, we've had a series of problems. And I'll back up one step. The Amtrak derailment in, I believe it was Washington State, not too long ago. That was one incident. And then we have the case for the special train carrying Republican members of Congress to a retreat in Virginia, had a collision with a truck. And then we have the latest one in South Carolina where a switch was misset. And they come together, and it's interesting because these are all, they're all three different things. Two of them are kind of related. The incident in Washington State was clearly where the engineer took a curve too fast.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something that some of the positive train control, PTC systems that have been talked about, could have possibly prevented. The incident with the train carrying the Republican congressman, that was something we see all too often up here in Northwest Indiana. A large vehicle, in this case a truck, disregarded the warnings or tried to beat the train. And, of course, the train always wins in that case. Probably nothing PTC could have done about that. Then the case in South Carolina where it appears that a CSX employee had left the switch that led from the main line to the siding containing the park freight train. It was left in the wrong position. That's also something that potentially a PTC system could have prevented because they're designed to keep two trains from being on the same piece of track at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, both the incident in South Carolina and the one in Washington State, many say, are really matters of training. Engineers and operating personnel are trained very rigorously in the section of track that they're operating over, where they have to slow down, where they can speed up, danger areas and so forth. And I know that there are very rigorous rules, for instance, about what crews will do with switches and parked trains and so forth, and that would apply to the South Carolina incident. So you have kind of a grab bag of things going on here. What further muddies the waters is that the South Carolina incident involved CSX railroad trackage, and as many of us know, CSX is going through a period of turmoil in which they are downsizing their operating staff significantly, as well as doing other things.
And that's affecting us here in Northwest Indiana too, isn't it? Because we're finding all these delays that pop up on the Hoosier State, and I'm sure even too on the Cardinal lines for Amtrak.
Well, right, because virtually all the Hoosier State's trackage is CSX, and the Cardinal, as it wends its way from New York to Chicago, goes over a lot of CSX trackage, both in Indiana and further east. So that's an ongoing problem. And, it's unfortunate that there doesn't seem to be a way that the public can be given, it can put many of these things in perspective. And see the large picture, because I'm sure many people see they just remember, three blaring headlines about Amtrak problems. Oh, we forgot to mention the Acela problem that was sandwiched in there sometime around the time of the South Carolina incident, where an Acela train basically separated, going 80 or 90 miles an hour. And we have to remember those Acela trains, I think, were new 30 years ago. So we're working with very old equipment there. So, yeah, I mean, it is very important. The rails have had, in modern times, an excellent safety record, actually. If you compare it to highway fatalities or even airline fatalities, they really do a good job. However, we're seeing problems, and if you look at the context, some of these problems could be due to the chaotic situation that, for instance, Amtrak is in because of, for one thing, uncertainty about their finances.
That's right. Yeah, we know the Trump administration's planning some infrastructure changes, would like to get something done, but very little, if anything, has been put in for rail at all.
Right, and we have no federal budget yet. You know, Congress and the White House have not gotten together and gotten the budget passed, so we really don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, you're right. There's been no specific mention of rail, you know, in the Trump initiative, although earlier during the campaigning season, you know, he said some things about bringing our rail up to par with the Chinese high-speed rail system, but we haven't heard too much about that lately. And, of course, with no budget, Amtrak doesn't know what its financing is going to be, and so that impacts practically everything. Even the Hoosier State, because you know that ties in with the Amtrak, you know, interstate system. I know that there have been the legislation that has come out of committee that regards transportation and Amtrak. It generally has seemed favorable. The congressmen as a whole don't seem inclined to basically gut the Amtrak budget or the transportation budget, but that's still all in committee. Mm-hmm. Nothing has actually come to the floor of the House or Senate and had a vote taken. So we're all just up in the air waiting to see what happens. That affects a lot of things in Indiana. For instance, we have our colleagues over in Fort Wayne that are working diligently to get a service reestablished from Chicago through Fort Wayne onto Columbus, Ohio.
Right.
To move forward, that requires some federal funding, which has been applied for. Right now, we don't know what federal funding is going to be available, let alone what the criteria will be for claiming it. So that's stalled. The idea that that we don't really have a budget and things are up in the air has a lot of ramifications. And I would imagine our friends over in the highway and the airways sectors are having similar problems.
I would imagine
they don't know what's going to happen either.
That's true.
We
talked a little bit here about Amtrak earlier here in our conversation, in particular about CSX, and we mentioned and kind of alluded to the problems that the Hoosier State Line has been facing with the CSX freight trains in the way, an awful lot of them, in turn delaying the departures and arrivals for the Hoosier State. What's the latest that you understand from the CSX people since they're getting short-staffed by the day, it seems?
Yeah. CSX basically has been uncooperative since the advent of Hunter Harrison, and then his replacement, since he unfortunately passed away, is carrying on his work. That railroad is still in a turmoil, and they are still having problems with maintaining their schedules and moving their trains about in a safe and efficient manner, and so that continues to affect both the Hoosier State and the Cardinal through Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
The best word I have from the people I have access to is that CSX basically stopped talking, you know, to NDOT once Hunter Harrison took over. So I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen there. I know that the freight customers are still unhappy. There have been hearings before the Surface Transportation Board, but the STB has limited powers of enforcement. Everyone seems to be upset with the way the CSX is running its business these days.
I can tell that obviously the freight customers are not happy. Now, although here in Northwest Indiana, a lot of the lines that come through are Canadian National lines that come through with a lot of freight. But you notice too that even on the other tracks, that there seem to be time periods where there are a lot of freight trains running, and then there are days seemingly on end where there are no freight trains running. So that's got to drive the freight customers crazy. They want their shipments in. They want to get those trains moved.
Well, you know, yeah, and as in many things, it comes down to human factors. My understanding is that before the Hunter-Harrison era, that CSX and our Department of Transportation, for instance, were really engaging in a very productive dialogue that was getting things done. And then basically, at a point in time, CSX stopped talking to INDOT.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this is not an official statement from INDOT, but it's what I have gleaned from, you know, talking with the various conversations with various people.
Right.
You know, it's been pointed out that basically CSX is bigger than some parts of the federal government and certainly bigger than the state of Indiana. There's a real concern on the part of some of us as to whether or not what happens in Indiana is even of any concern to CSX. You know, including the trial balloon they've floated about selling off, you know, parts of their system. Well, you know, we don't know. Are they considering selling off the part that runs from Indianapolis up to Dyer here? And if they did that, well, then what happens to our train service?
Right.
So there's a lot of unknowns there. So far, I can say, so far there have not been any indications that CSX is close to resolving its internal problems, no indication that it's particularly interested in cooperating with Amtrak or the state of Indiana to run passenger trains. A lot of us are trying to figure out how long that situation has gone on. I know our organization has contacted every member of Indiana's congressional delegation, bringing with expressions of concern, bringing the situation to their attention and ask them to do what they can about it. It's just a very bad situation, and right now we can't see the end of it. And of course, how do you build usage on a rail passenger line if you can't guarantee it's going to stick to schedule?
Yeah, that's true. But speaking of schedule changes here, we ought to probably mention too, and this is not related to as much to the Cardinal and the Hoosier State, although they are affected, as it is to points to the east because of the service that leaves Indiana and goes off to the east and ends up going all the way to New York City. I guess there's some changes Amtrak has had to tell people about to be aware of here very soon because of some work that is going to happen at Penn Station in New York City.
Right. We received a notice that basically the Cardinal's being truncated north of Washington, D.C. as of the end of this month, with no specific commitment or prediction as to when the surface will return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is important in a way because it's central Indiana's only direct rail link with New York City, as well as Washington. So it is of some concern to us. What is of concern is that Amtrak appears to have been very close-mouthed about this suspension of service. You know, I've been talking to people up and down the route of the Cardinal between here and the East Coast, and evidently not only have notices not gone up in stations, but in stations that are staffed, the operating personnel haven't been made aware of it either. So this has been kind of a stealth operation. And because of that, our organization is worried about Amtrak's ultimate intentions. There's been cases in the past where service has been discontinued or truncated for reasons that had to do with maintenance or repairs or temporary things, and yet it never really came back.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I can't sit here and tell you that's going to be the case here. On the other hand, because Amtrak hasn't projected when the service will be resumed, and because of the fact that they haven't been too public about spreading the word, we have concerns. Okay.
Do you think that maybe in this case here in particular, with the route ending just outside of Washington, D.C., as you say, at least for this particular period, they may have to work out some kind of alternate transportation like busing or something to be able to make the rest of the route in to New York City?
Well, the thing is, there are like 9 or 10 trains a day between mm-hmm. Washington and New York, okay? These coasts are very well served.
Right.
It's sort of like the South Shore between Chicago and Michigan City. Mm-hmm. There are many trains. So certainly you could take, for instance, the Cardinal to D.C., and then you'd have to change trains and then go on to Philadelphia or New York City. Okay, not a disaster, but the thing is, you have to change trains. You know, I know all of us have been frustrated, for instance, when we've flown someplace. You know, you want to fly between City A and City B, which you think is a relatively short hop, but yet you have to go through a hub and you have to change planes, and then if there's a problem, you miss connections and so forth and so forth. Well, you have the same thing in rail travel. You know, if you know that you're going to get on the train in Indianapolis and you can get off it in New York, that's one thing. If you know that you're going to get on the train in Indianapolis and you're going to have to get off it in D.C., and then you're going to have to change to another train and then continue, you know, that's another matter entirely.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's not a catastrophe, but it's an indication, you know, possibly of things going the wrong way. We have a couple trains going from Chicago to New York and to D.C., which are also options, but...
Well, we'll just have to see because, yeah, at the very least, it's going to be an inconvenience. It's a planned inconvenience if you know, like, if you're making the train route from Indiana to Washington, D.C., and then catching the train to go south to Florida, that's one thing. And you know about that, and you know that you have to kind of plan for that. But then you don't, here in this case, you don't know what's going to happen for the surface. You know you'll have to change over someplace outside Washington, D.C., or at Washington, D.C., I suppose, to be able to make the rest of the route. It's not what you want to have planned, and it's certainly not very good if you want to make a nice spring vacation out of riding the rail, so to speak.
Right. I mean, it's all the problem. It's all the same problems you have as you transfer planes if you're flying someplace. You know, you have to worry about, is your luggage going to get transferred? If I'm late, what can I do about connections and so forth?
Well, Steve, we'll have to leave it at that. We really appreciate you taking time to talk about some of the issues with the rail safety and some of the other problems along the line for passenger rail customers. We've been talking with Steve Coxhead. He's the president of the Indiana Passenger Rail Alliance, and we do appreciate you taking time to be with us to bring us up to date on some of these things, and we'll have you back on again to get kind of an update here as the travel season continues on.
Thank you, Chris.
You've been listening to Regionally Speaking. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for being with us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.